Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this meeting of Midlothian Council on the 28th of June 2016, which will be webcast. This meeting will not be broadcast live, but will be available on the internet following the meeting. This meeting will also be audio recorded as normal. I have the discretion to terminate or suspend recording if, in my opinion, allowing the recording to continue would prejudice the proceedings of the meeting. Equally so, items that are heard in private or items whereby the public publication of the recording may interfere with the debate, then these areas of the recording will not be made available to the public. Members are reminded that the cameras are activated by the sound system and that must switch on microphones when speaking and off when finished speaking. But before we go into the meeting proper, I would like everyone who is able to stand for a minute's silence for the MP Joe Cox. Thank you. Do you have any apologies for absence?
Thanks, Provost. We have apologies received from Councillor Montgomery.
Thank you. Order of business.
Thanks, Provost. The order of business is as the agenda that's been circulated with the following amendments. Item 8.1, a replacement paper, was circulated to members this morning. This was necessary as additional information has been received in respect of the constitution of Midlothian Access Forum. An additional item, item 8.23, review of local government workers' pay and grading, was circulated to members this morning also. And in relation to the motions, the Provost has asked that item 7.2 will be heard first and item 7.1 will be heard second. Thank you.
Thank you. If there are any declarations of interest throughout the meeting, please so declare.
Provost, could I just declare an interest and 8.7, the adult care and health budgets. As a member of the IGB, we are required to declare that interest. However, we are exempt to stay and to take part in all issues surrounding that matter.
Councillor Pottinger.
I would also like to declare the same interest.
Thank you.
Provost, on behalf of Councillor Johnson and myself, we are also in the IJB.
Thank you. Of the minutes of the previous meeting, the meeting of the Cabinet, 19th of April 2016, Planning Committee, 1st of March 2016, Planning Committee on the 19th of April 2016, General Purposes Committee, 23rd of February 2016. Appeals Committee, 8th of March 2016. Local Review Body, 26th of April 2016. The Audit Committee, 10th of May 2016. Police and Fire and Rescue Board, 23rd of February 2016. We also note there was a meeting of Midlothian Council on the 8th of June submitted for approval as a correct record. There are no questions to the Council Leader. Now move to the motions, and the motion from Councillor Milligan.
Thank you, Provost. Provost, it's with great sadness that we tabled this motion. I'm sure everybody in this room, and indeed throughout Scotland, will share with us the absolute nation's shock and horror at the killing of Joe Cox. I think everybody around this table will endorse the sentiments of her husband that we all unite to fight against this hatred that killed her. And, Provost, could I ask that Council agree to write to her family on behalf of the people of Midlothian to express our deepest and most heartfelt condolences to her, him and his children. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Milligan. I will make sure that a letter goes to the family. Councillor Russell.
Thank you, Provost. I echo my colleague's sentiments, and I wish to second this motion in memory of Joe Cox, Member of Parliament. I have been, like many around this table, I'm sure, been approached by their constituents, all expressing their very real sadness, irrespective of political parties, at the loss of this young woman on the start of her political journey. And like many of us, I never knew her, but since her tragic murder, we have all came to respect her abilities, not just as a Member of Parliament, but as a human being. I have read many tributes from her friends and colleagues, but the ones from her constituents I found to be most inspiring. As we all know, politicians do not have a great deal of respect from the public, so let us, who work in public service, strive to work as hard as she did and to speak out against any forms of hatred and extremist. This should be her legacy.
Thank you. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. My colleagues and on this side of the table, we too echo the sentiments of our colleagues, and we think as well that we should take stock of how we go about our business and make sure we're all safe. So do everything you can to do that, and let this be the last disastrous thing that ever happens in our politics. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Johnson. Now we want to item 8.1. Sorry. We now move on to the motion 7.1, led by Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. This motion was tabled way before we knew what the results of the referendum on Thursday night would be, so I'm happy to move this part and let my colleagues move the subsequent amendment.
Okay, I believe there's an amendment put in to this amendment, to this motion. Councillor Coventry.
Thanks, Provost. I'm assuming everyone's got a copy of the amendment. It's been circulated around the council members, you know. I think it's important that we, as a council, make clear that, you know, Scotland voted to remain part of the European Union on Thursday night. We welcome the people who have moved here, not only from other parts of Europe, but from all across the world, who have given us the honour of moving into our community. They enrich our community, and we should make sure that it's quite clear that these individuals are welcomed here. The contribution that the people from all across the world have made to Midlothian and to Scotland has made our lives richer, and we have to ensure that we as a community do not allow people to be divided upon race, religion or ethnicity. And that's why I've put forward this amendment, and I would hope that the Council would support that. Thank you.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. Yes, I would echo those sentiments, but I think there are wider issues as well. Obviously, I share the Councillor Coventry's concerns about the impact on people's freedom to travel, to live, to study abroad, something which I certainly have valued. But there are wider implications as well of Scotland and the UK leaving the European Union. We have access to a huge internal market, which is a level playing field, free of import-export tariffs as it stands at the moment. We also have employment rights, minimum maternity pay and paid leave, anti-discrimination legislation, health and safety laws come from Europe, consumer rights, for example, the simple charges for mobile phone roaming charges abroad, which have been levelled, capped, reduced by the European Community's directives. More general consumer protection legislation, reciprocal health care when travelling, anti-pollution and waste laws, funding for infrastructure in rural and deprived areas, something Scotland particularly has depended on in the past, funding for farmers, again something which Scotland particularly benefits from, research and innovation funding, and I think the bush will suffer significantly if we lose that from Europe. And when we work together with other countries and pool our resources, leaving the EU will mean setting up trade agreements with other countries on our own. Hundreds of new pieces of new legislation that would be required for that, and I find it deeply worrying. I would therefore like to formally second this motion, this amendment. I think that it is very important that particularly Scotland remains within the European community.
Thank you. Councillor Milligan.
Provost, thank you. The sentiment, the amendment, and the main is probably welcomed by most people around the table. However, I have a great deal of problems agreeing to the very last bit, and that is that we therefore welcome the First Minister's determination to ensure that Scotland is not forced out of the EU against the democratic wishes of the Scottish people. I don't know what that means. I don't know what the cost of that is. I don't know what the implications of that is. Does it mean leaving the biggest trading partners we'll have, which is the UK, to remain that? What is the chance? Effectively, we're being asked to endorse a blank cheque, something we can't. So we can't support that very end part of the motion, but the rest of the motion and the sentiment of the amendment, sorry, we would be happy with that deleted from it. I think the Council needs to concentrate as well on what the effect of the decision will be on the Council. We need to be looking to see what that effect might have in the short term, and then watch how negotiations go and how things move forward in the long term. But certainly in the short term, is maybe a question to ask Gary here, is has there been any preparation work done for the result of the referendum? Because I'm sure the officers will have balanced that they were not certain of the outcome, so there would be a risk assessment done as to what that has there been any preliminary work been done by officers to determine the full effect in the early stages that we have, and how might or when might that be available? Do we have any indications, for example, on borrowing rates, etc., now that the AAA rating has been removed? What projects within Midlothian could be affected by any to any degree by the removal of EU funding in the longer term? Is there any effect in the short term? Stuff like Leader Plus, etc. How do we plan forward with that? If not, can you maybe indicate when a report might be forthcoming?
Mr. Fairley.
Yeah, and Provost, in terms of the financial implications arising from last week, it's still very early stages. As a council, we need to assess what the implications are as the national picture becomes clearer and more information is known on the timeline, and also the economic the impact on the wider economy, and indeed the future arrangements for grant funding or replacement of grant funding of EU projects. So at this point, I can't give you any specific details on any of those, And indeed, it may be some time before we have a clearer assessment of the picture. But in conjunction with colleagues, we would look to update Council on any material risks that arise over the coming months.
Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. I can confirm that I've formally written to the Chief Executive, Kenneth Laurie, on Sunday asking these very questions. And I know it's a difficult time because, as everyone keeps saying, it's a bit naff, though we're in uncharted territory, but that's what we are in, and we need to keep just waiting and see what happens some of the time. But at least we have formally requested what are we going to do meantime, what is our long-term future, and the next steps. Thank you.
Councillor Constable.
Thank you, Provost. In all this discussion over the European referendum, one aspect was only very lightly touched on. Mostly it was about economics, immigration and so on. But speaking as one of the older members present in this room, the idea of the presence of war within Europe. I know it seems a long time ago, but just in my lifetime, the day I was born, German bombers were flying over Edinburgh, and a fortnight later, my father died in the skies over Germany. So I feel very badly about the fact that war and the rapprochement that has taken place across Europe has been very, very much appreciated over the last 40 years and the last 70 years, 72 years since I was born. And this aspect, I think, should be emphasised. The idea of a European war now is really unthinkable, though just beyond the borders of Europe we are, there is conflict in Ukraine, and there was, of course, in the former Yugoslavia. So these things can arise again. It's a very much a backward step. I was horrified at the result on Friday. It says all the wrong messages, and I would want this last paragraph, this last sentence, rather, to be kept in the motion.
Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. I too just wanted to reiterate sentiments of Bob there. I think the last part of the amendment is actually very important because it talks about the democratic will of the Scottish people, and I think that all of us around this table, regardless of party or stance in the independence referendum, were quite aware of the argument that if Scotland and indeed Midlothian wanted to stay in the EU, then they needed to vote against independence. It's quite clear that that is not the case, and I don't think it's just the case that we are in the UK and therefore our vote should stay that way. The whole of Scotland voted to stay within the EU, and I think that for us as elected members to try and talk about against that is wholly undemocratic, and I would like to see the last sentence in particular stay.
Councillor Coventry.
Yeah, thanks, Provost. My understanding is that Councillor Milligan campaigned for a leave vote, so I would have thought that anyone who campaigned for a leave vote would have given some thought to the consequences of a leave vote or a leave being implemented or forced upon Scotland. But let me just mention a few of them. Training, ESF funding for research and development, education, job security, workers' rights, travel, etc. I'm not going to go on, and I could go on here for half an hour, I'm sure, but these are just a few of the points. If Scotland was dragged out of the European Union, it would be completely undemocratic and unjust, particularly when you consider that less than 2 years ago we were told that we had to vote no in order to remain part of the EU. And now we find ourselves being forced out, even although, as my colleague Councillor Parry has just pointed out, every local authority in Scotland voted in a majority to remain.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. I'd like to come back as well on this last sentence here that I agree with Councillor Parry that it should remain. I personally feel it would be rather perverse for somebody who is opposed to Scottish independence to want this removed, because if the First Minister does not explore all options for Scotland to remain within Europe, within the United Kingdom, then I am pretty sure that an second independence referendum, which will be won by those like myself who want independence, will occur. I have recently spoken to a few people who campaigned, knocked on doors for the No campaign in the last independence referendum, who now say they will vote yes if Scotland leaves the European Union. So I really cannot see why opposing the First Minister trying to remain within Europe, within the UK, is against the express wishes of those who want to remain part of the UK.
Okay, can I have a seconder for Do you want to come back in again, Councillor Milligan?
Yeah, just to clarify Councillor Baxter's last statement, this doesn't say within the EU. It just simply says the UK, we therefore welcome the First Minister's determination to ensure that Scotland is not forced out of the EU against the democratic wishes of the Scottish people. There was a democratic vote taken. In 2014, we agreed to stay as part of Britain. I know we have differences, and you're quite right. You know what way I campaigned. The reality here is we're being asked here to welcome and to sign a blank cheque because we don't know what the price that would need to be paid for Scotland to stay in EU against what was a British vote and a British decision. So therefore, we can't accept that. So I formally move that that part be deleted from the amendment.
Councillor Devic.
I feel very strongly about Scotland remaining part of the EU. I come from the continent, and I was devastated when we had the election and the result was that we wanted to leave the EU. I'm now equally determined that we must do everything in our powers to support the First Minister to make sure that Scotland does not leave the EU. And if it means that there will be a separate Scotland, no longer part of the United Kingdom, so it be. And I find it surprising that Mr. Milligan finds it so difficult to understand that.
Councillor Johnson.
I absolutely agree with my colleagues that the last sentence remains. The First Minister is the political leader of our country, and it's her who will have the discussions with others on the continent to help us remain in the EU as we wanted and voted for. I think it's imperative that stays.
Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. Just to sum up and just to reiterate what people have said, and it's just the last point I want to make, is that the last sentence is so important. And not only that, but in the Scottish Parliament, it's been taken in a cross-party sentiment. And so for the Labour Party here to try and propose to take that part out when you've got the Labour Party, Lib Dems, SNP and Greens all singing from the same hymn sheet in the Scottish Parliament leaves you standing on the side of the Tories.
Councillor Muirhead.
This Labour group's never been afraid to dispute any views of any of the rest of your members because, unlike yourselves, we're entitled to do that. It's not written in our rule book that we can't criticise the people that are above us, or supposedly above us in the party. When I realised the result on Friday morning, I was devastated as well. And I've got to say to you that, you know, my first inclination was to say to you guys the day, that's exactly what you wanted. My first inclination, I'm listening to Bob and his contribution about the conflict that's existed in Europe over the years, in particular in the earlier part of the last century. And I think, like him, that side of the thing has been ignored, certainly hasn't been focused on the danger that now exists because, not just because we've came out, but because of the potential consequences to Europe as a whole, the potential destabilisation that us coming out might have. And I do. I mean, my gut reaction for day one, when this was going to, we're going to go into a referendum, that was my main consideration. It wasn't the economic side of it. I have got real fears for the safety of Europe. So, you know, I go a long way, the sentiments of Bob, and it's because of things like that I kind of step back a wee bit for saying that it's exactly what you wanted. It is convenient to some extent for you in terms of pushing again for another referendum up here. And I think that was clear from way before the decision was taken. But I'm certainly no in a position where I'm prepared to give you First Minister a blank cheque to do whatever is necessary because I certainly would not agree to a separation from, I think Derek touched on, you know, separating away from your biggest trading partner to join with your second biggest trading partner. So I certainly would want that. I do 100% agree with everything that's prior to that, and I think it's really important that we do send out a message to people living in Midlothian and in Scotland in general that, you know, they're welcome here. I think that's very, very important that we put that on record. So I'm quite happy with the first part of the motion, but no the second part. So I second Councillor Mulligan's proposal.
Okay, we have an amendment to this motion put forward by Councillor Mulligan, which is to remove the last sentence of that motion. Those in favour of the amendment, please show.
Seven.
Those against the amendment, please show.
Ten.
Those in favour of the motion, please show.
Ten.
Those against the motion, please show. The motion is carried. We now move to item 8.1, appointments to outside bodies, a report by Mr Blair.
Thanks, Provost. This report follows the Council meeting in November 2015, and the appendix to the report updates Council representation on outside bodies. Today, Council is invited to note this report, and if members require any clarifications, either myself or my colleague Kyle will be able to assist. Thank you, Provost.
Okay, is the Council happy to note? Councillor Johnson.
I just propose we accept this recommendation. This side of the House is happy with it.
Okay. Council happy to accept this report. Thank you. Item 8.2, which is one of your follow-on papers. Financial Strategy 2017-18 to 2020-21, a report by Mr Fairley, Head of Finance and Integrated Service Support.
Thanks, Provost. Provost, this report provides Council with an update on the Financial Strategy through to 2021. The report includes an update on prospects for Scottish Government grant for the next few years, updated budget projections, an update on the existing and proposed change programmes that Council have to address the financial shortfall, the proposed timetable to determine the 17-18 budget, and also reserves. As highlighted in section 3 of the report, the timing of and indeed the level of Scottish Government grant will be the most critical aspect of the budget projections over the coming months. The report sets out expectations regarding timing. A member should note the risk of both a delay in an announcement of the Scottish budget and the associated grant settlement, or a continuation of an approach of one-year settlements. And that's particularly so given the increased uncertainty as a consequence of the EU referendum. As set out in Section 3, the expectation at this time would still be that we will see that the 17-18 grant settlement could be as challenging as that we saw for the current financial year. However, until government publishes its budget, which is expected in the autumn, the figures that are set out in the financial strategy will remain planning assumptions and will inevitably change. And members should also note the impact that relatively small changes in projected levels of grant has on the overall budget projection. Turning to council tax, given the government's manifesto proposal to cap council tax increases to 3% per annum, and given the grant prospects described earlier in the financial strategy, the strategy itself incorporates a 3% increase in council tax for each of the years in question. Alongside the challenging grant position, the cost of service provision is expected to continue and to increase, firstly as a consequence of an increasing and ageing population, and secondly as inflationary and other cost increases, particularly pay levels, are factored in. When we've taken all of these factors into account, the current assessment at this time is a budget shortfall for 17-18 of some £11 million, with a potential for it to rise to £37 million by 2020-21. Again, I'd stress these are very much projections and they'll inevitably change as a consequence of the changing economic outlook and as governments at both UK and Scotland develop and adjust their spending plans over the coming months. Section 6 sets out the Developing Change Programme to address the financial challenge. This programme encompasses the Delivering Excellence Programme, the delivery of existing savings already approved by Council, the Transformation Programme, EWIM, the reshaping of our asset base, the capital and reserve strategy as those develop over the coming months, the delivery of operational savings and the development of further savings options for 17-18 and beyond. Taking cognizance of the extent of savings anticipated to be required to secure a balanced budget, the Chief Executive has instructed each director to bring forward as a minimum savings proposals of £5 million. After reflecting that the present savings targets associated with the change programme and the council tax increase that I touched on earlier, the budget gap, that's the part of the shortfall that still remains to be addressed, is predicted to be £7.7 million for 17-18, rising to £28.6 million. Section 7 of the report then goes on to set out a proposed timetable for Council's consideration that would support Council to determine the financial strategy and to determine the 2017-18 budget and council tax levels. Section 9 then goes on to provide members with an update of reserves that reflect the financial performance reported elsewhere on today's agenda. Provost, I suppose in conclusion I would reiterate that there remains a significant degree of uncertainty regarding the future financial prospects for the Council. And against that backdrop, the financial strategy sets out a timeline and actions to prepare itself for the 17-18 budget process. Today, Provost Council is asked to consider the recommendations which are set out in Section 12.
Thank you, Mr. Fairley. Councillor Parry. Mr. Fairley, could you...
Provost.
Thank you.
Thanks, Provost. I think that we are very much on the same page, and this is something that we've been talking about for a long time. All councillors have. But I think one of the things that struck me on the paper was that we were talking about what was expected, and it seems now that expect the unexpected, essentially, particularly when it comes to finance. I was quite aware that leaving the EU would have some repercussions, but I think now that it's unfolding over the last few days, particularly looking through finance papers to come, there is a lot of EU funding streams in there, and I think we're all right to be particularly concerned about that. I think that we need to be particularly careful. I think we need to, more than ever now, focus on our savings programme. And I think that we need to make sure that we consult residents as much as possible to make sure that we get the right outcomes and still manage to balance the budget. I think that quite a lot of the work that's going on in terms of looking at what's going to happen around the EU, there's a lot of work going on in UK Parliament and the Scottish Parliament, and I'm grateful for the cross-party support there as well. I think that as much as we can do to try and bring stability across the nation and across Midlothian is a very good thing. I think the only thing that I would ask is just to reiterate, I know that Cath had written to Kenneth on Sunday, and I'll also be sitting down with the finance team and looking to see what it is that Midlothian needs to do to make sure that we're fully prepared, but that we're taking the right steps to make sure that we're financially prudent. Happy to move the recommendations A to G.
Thank you. Councillor Mulligan.
Provost, thank you. As Gary pointed out, this is probably still work in progress and is probably reflective of the worst case scenario. So I think we need to be really hopeful that some of the cuts that are aimed our way aren't going to come, that we can actually see a softening for the Scottish Government. The £2.9 million indicated that would be cut every year. We also see that we're going to have to invest future in education, and a lot of that is going to be to ensure that we can provide the additional hours that are required there, and hopefully some government funding will come to us in that. We can see the pressures and demographic changes to the area, where we have an ageing population which is going to have considerable effects on our budgets. So it is, and there is a lot of work to be done here. I think the really important matter here for us, and I think across board, is that the earlier the officers come forward with what they're thinking to allow the politicians to have a better idea of where they may be perhaps see more efficiencies or where we would rather cease doing one service is badly affecting another service. I think certainly for this side, we've been looking for information for as far back as January that hasn't been forthcoming yet. We hope that we're going to be given that soon because we really need a reasonable length of time to be able to meet with officers, to discuss issues, to look further into issues and to put up reasonable alternatives if we didn't agree with the issues that are being put forward by the corporate management team. And I'm sure on your side as well, you will be looking for that as well. So I would just urge officers to get us the information that they have and their train of thought and to be able to provide us with a regular update on the ever-changing models.
Thank you. Councillor Beattie.
Thank you, Provost. A question for Gary Fairley, please, and or any other officers who might care to comment. Given the not inconsiderable impact of last week's vote on global stock markets, do we have any early warnings about pension funds from the pension fund managers that we... I realise that this is a very turbulent time and things may stabilise. I think we're all hoping that they may very soon. But nonetheless, currently, global stock markets have taken a pounding. That's public knowledge. Clearly, that's got to have impacted on pension funds for everyone, not least in the public sector. Can we have any early advice? I think it's really following on from Councillor Milligan's point that sooner rather than later, because clearly it's something that concerns everyone, regardless of age at this time.
In terms of the Lothian Pension Fund, the accounts which are later on the agenda clearly give an assessment of the funding position as at 31st of March. The key issue for the Council is the annual pension contributions that it's required to make, and those are determined by the triannual actuarial valuation. I know that the pension fund has a finance briefing later this week, and so that'll be probably the first point where we start to get some early indications of what the longer term impacts of the events of last week might be on pension funding. But I think it's probably, I'm not wanting to preempt that, but still very early stages in terms of assessing the wider economic and longer term funding and cost issues for the Council.
Any other comment? Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. I just wanted to say on the back of Councillor Milligan's point, I too would echo that a timeline is really important, information is really important, so I'd like to re-extend the invitation to take up your places on the Business Transformation Steering Group. No?
We will continue as the opposition to look at this in the normal light and to take up matters through the Performance Review Scrutiny Committee.
OK. Council happy to accept the recommendation in this report. Thank you.
Thank you, Provost. Elected members will be aware that this Children and Young Persons Act has various parts which will be enacted in stages. This report brings members up to date on the implementation of several parts of the 2014 Act. Section 3.1 outlines what Midlothian has done to ensure that we meet the legislative requirement to provide 600 hours early learning and childcare for all 3- and 4-year-olds and certain entitled 2-year-olds. Section 3.2 appears to be missing, so just in case you were looking for that. Section 3.3 outlines what work we've undertaken to ensure that we're ready to implement the named person from the 31st of August 2016. The section outlines what training has taken place so that staff understand their role in relation to the Act. It highlights how the named person service will operate during school holidays and how the information will be shared on CMIS. Section 3.4 outlines what action we're taking in relation to children's rights and service planning. That's quite a high level of demand there. Section 3.5 outlines the work we're undertaking in relation to those in care and care leavers and the Children's Champion Group. Members will note that we were recently awarded £193,000 from the Life Changes Trust to focus on supporting our care leavers. Section 5 outlines the recommendations and the Council is asked to note the recommendations as set out in the report. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. Councillor Constable.
Thank you, Provost. If we're looking at the recommendations, we've done a tremendous amount of work in this. I want to refer you particularly to one paragraph now at the end of section 3.1 before 3.3, the missing 3.2. Midlothian has been at the forefront of adopting flexible. That paragraph there, it shows a tremendous recognition that's come from the government in the work that Midlothian has done. We've led very much in this work of this very important work of early intervention, good outcomes for our disadvantaged communities. And if I can take you now to the recommendations at the end of the report, where I can find them, it says Council is asked to note the Scottish Government's intention. So this is a major expansion of this work, and I would ask, propose an amendment that Council is asked to welcome this. It's going to be a big challenge for us. It's a lot of work, but we've done, our officials and officers have done very well in the past. But to expand this from 600 to 1,140 hours is going to require a lot of resources. It will be a challenge, but it's a challenge we should welcome because it will produce so much benefit for our disadvantaged communities and our young children. And that's the future of our county. We've talked about the past in the previous item, but this is good to talk about the future. And I would want you to accept all these recommendations. And so I just care to move these recommendations just now.
Councillor Muirhead.
Thanks, Provost. The report indicating how we've achieved the 600 hours, that wasn't without its problems, and I congratulate the staff for managing to implement that 600 hours relatively straightforwardly, and it's something that needs to be absolutely welcomed. I welcome the intention to increase the provision for free early learning and childcare to 1,140 hours. But I have serious concerns about how we're actually going to achieve that. Knowing the difficulties that we had, in getting the 600, and we managed to do it. But doubling that up is going to give us problems. Now, in terms of recruitment, I would think that will be difficult, but it will not be insurmountable. But there are real issues in terms of infrastructure, in terms of classroom space. And I think that this talks about, and to note that as the first bullet point there, and consider how it will be resourced. But there's actually not very much in here about how it will be resourced. And obviously, we're going to rely on getting adequate support from the Scottish Government to resource this, in particular, as I say, the kind of capital requirements in terms of the additional building space that we need. And I think we've got to be very careful in terms of, given this is running between now and 2021, which is the target date, if you like, that when we are building or extending any primary schools, that we make sure that we include within that adequate provision for all the... I know we don't have catchment areas, that's a paper that's coming up later, but you know, all the children that live within the catchment area of the primary school, we should have adequate, when we're building new schools, we should have adequate nursery provision within the schools. Because what I didn't want us to see us doing is heading to a situation where we're overly reliant on the private sector to carry out this additional this additional requirement. So, you know, we need to, wherever possible, make sure that we, in our building, our new builds, and in our extensions of existing schools, make provision within that for the nursery pupils.
Councillor Beattie.
Thank you, Provost. I can only say that I obviously second Councillor Constable's, unless of course Councillor Muirhead is already there, when changing that, in amending that first bullet point to say that we welcome rather than note. And given that, as someone who was substantially involved in the Early Years programme and witnessed firsthand the extraordinary talented and committed efforts of people who work for this Education Authority and Children's Services, who put forward examples of creative, intuitively inspired work that was presented to Scotland as a whole as a model that was exemplary, I think we should be all recognising, and also recognising the importance of that in having achieved the challenge that Councillor Muirhead's already made reference to, of what was confronting us some years ago, that team have risen to, and I have no doubt will rise to again. I don't gainsay any of Councillor Muirhead's comments about the importance of making proper provision and not being over-reliant on the private sector. But within that, this isn't just about buildings. It's more significantly about the team that will lead this and make this possible. And for that, can I just comment sincerely the extraordinary contribution and enthusiastic commitment of officers of this council who've made it possible in the past, and I have every confidence will do so again. This is an incredibly important part of building a future Scotland, and I really do welcome it.
Councillor Constable.
Thank you. Just to say, I couldn't agree more with Councillor Muirhead's comments. We must build accordingly to do this. And as sort of reference to the resources must come from the Scottish Government. It will be up to us, especially maybe in this side of the House, but definitely in all sides of the House, to ensure that that does happen. The First Minister has put a lot of emphasis into education, and we'll be making sure that the money comes with it too, hopefully.
Councillor Muirhead.
Just to say I'm happy to second Councillor Constable's amendment.
Thank you. Does Council accept the recommendation as amended by Councillor Constable? Thank you. We now move to item 8.4, and that's again one of your follow-on papers. Positive Destinations, Developing the Young Workforce and Lifelong Learning and Employability, a report by Dr. Vickers.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to outline the progress made in relation to sustained positive destinations, as outlined in the Summary of Statistics for Attainment Leaver Destinations report, which was only just published on the 22nd of June. Section 2 of the report outlines the background and highlights that a record level of 93% of young people have sustained a positive destination. This is our highest ever recorded figure for sustained destinations and shows a 3% improvement when compared with last year. The report also outlines that we now have a five-year positive trend secured and that we are now 1% above the national average, which was 92%, with a reported 8.6% improvement when comparing 2010-11 with this year. Section 2.2 outlines the continued work in line with developing Scotland's young workforce by outlining the eight main priorities. And the report concludes with four recommendations. Firstly, to note the five-year positive trend in sustained destinations, to note that this is Midlothian's highest recorded sustained destinations to date and is 1% above the national average, to congratulate our pupils, parents, staff and all partners on delivering such a positive increase in sustained destinations, and to note the focused area of attention prioritised by the Developing Midlothian's Young Workforce Board.
Thank you, Dr. Vicker. Councillor Constable.
Thank you, Provost. This is another good news story. In moving these recommendations, I'd just like to draw your attention to some of the priorities stated there on page 5 of the report, priority 7, the STEM, the science, technology, engineering and maths. This is where it really is intelligent to see a lot of effort going to this, because this is where the future economic driving force behind all the country, and this is something which we do lag a bit within this country. However, in moving to the recommendations itself, as Grace said, I'd like to go to note the third bullet point, congratulate the pupils, parents, staff and all our council officials in their progress in delivering such a marvellous improvement. Thank you.
Councillor Muirhead.
Thanks, Provost. I can remember sitting at a council meeting quite a few years ago and asking about positive destinations and asking for information about, well, that's fine, that's where the youngsters are going to when they leave the school, but what happens after that? How many of them are keeping the jobs, or what's happened after the training and things like that? So I'm really pleased that we now are so proactive and looking at, sustainable positive destinations and intervening where possible to try and improve the long-term outcomes of the youngsters. And I know for briefings that I've had from the director and the head of education, that there are particular members of staff that have made really significant contributions to that, and I would like particularly to thank them for their real, effective, proactive work in ensuring that our youngsters have a much better long-term future. And I'd also like to congratulate the youngsters and members of staff who have supported them in their efforts. Thank you.
Councillor Coventry.
Yeah, thanks, Provost. And likewise, I would like to thank Dr. Vickers and her staff for the fantastic good news story, which this is. When you consider where Midlothian was only a few years ago when this administration came in, lying second bottom, 31 out of 32 local authorities, and now we're pushing at the top of that league table. So it's fantastic, I just want to draw attention to a couple of points here. At the end of 2.1, I really welcome the emphasis on, vocational pathways, etc. There's a number of bullet points there. There's a misapprehension amongst school leavers and the general population that everything depends upon qualifications. And of course, qualifications are vitally important. But research shows that employers are much more interested when recruiting young people from school or college or from university in that young person's attitude for work. 85% say that is the most important factor when they take into consideration. Also, their aptitude for work. That's not to put down the importance of qualifications. But I also want to give you a couple of figures here. £56,000 and £104,000. The figures are an average cost over a working life for young people who have a period of time in a negative destination prior to the 20th birthday. There is a direct cost, benefit payments, additional health costs, etc., of £56,000. And there is also an opportunity cost lost spending, contributions to the economy, etc., of £104,000. So these figures are provided by a number of research organisations. I've picked them up from the University of York. But you can see why it's important not only for the individuals, but it's important for Midlothian and for society as a whole that we get as many young people as possible into a positive destination. So, thank you.
Councillor Young.
Thank you, Provost. Yes, just to build on both of those contributions, I also welcome the good news here. Just really a question as much as anything, or maybe an invitation for some reflection that might help us all to understand. Obviously, all of the positive outcomes are to be welcomed, and it's not the case that any are particularly more positive a category than the others. But just in terms of higher education and further education, both in Midlothian, a little bit below the Scottish average, and both slightly less, slightly down on where they were at the last reported figures. Obviously, it's not the case that there's a set route that works for everybody, but it would be good to just maybe understand a little bit more about that and make sure that our young people weren't missing out on some opportunities.
You see some increases in employment, and some of those destinations go along with further ed or higher ed qualifications. So that's saying that we're things that are coming through from the academies model, which is a good thing that we like to see. We still want to see more of our young people sustaining destinations within further education. So that's something that's staying on our radar, certainly as a main stepping stone to either higher education or to further employment. And we're working closely with our senior phase partners, all of our six secondaries, to align timetables to make sure that we have more choice within the secondary stages to ensure that more of our young people stay on to the end of S6, because we know through that route more of them will enter higher and further education. So this is a longer term platform for us, and you're absolutely right in saying that it's not one size fits all, but certainly we would like to see us come in line with the national average for higher and further education.
Council happy to accept this report. Thank you. We move to item 8.5, creating a world-class education system, visible learning in Midlothian, report by Dr. Vickers.
Thank you. So further to the Council seminar on visible learning, which took place last week, the purpose of this report today is to provide a summary of progress with visible learning across all of our schools in Midlothian. Section 2 of the report outlines the background to the visible learning approach and the importance of research and evidence-based practice in our commitment to the creation of a world-class education service. Over the course of the last year, 520 primary teachers took part in the Visible Learning Foundation Days, and a wide range of learning assistants and secondary teachers have also been trained. Section 2.6 outlines the impact of our work in relation to visible learning, and I hope that the seminar, which was actually delivered by children and teachers, helped to illustrate the real impact that this is having on our children's daily learning and on building their resilience. Midlothian have also presented at the Visible Learning World Conference, and in November this year we will co-host the first ever Scottish Visible Learning Conference, where Professor John Hattie will be presenting, and this will also include examples from our Midlothian schools, so children actually presenting on a world stage. This report concludes with three recommendations. Firstly, to note the progress made in the development of visible learning across all of our schools in Midlothian, to approve the continued focus on developing visible learning with the appropriate professional learning opportunities for all of our staff, and to congratulate members of the Educational Psychology Service and also to all of our education staff who presented at the Visible Learning World Conference.
Thank you, Dr. Vickers. I think the Council would like to congratulate the quality of the children's presentation when they came here into the seminar. Councillor Constable.
Yes, Provost, you're taking the words out of my mouth. Also, in moving the recommendations, I congratulate Grace and all the team on the excellent work done so far. Now, we do have many seminars in these chambers, and sometimes they can be rather long and difficult. But last week, we had a most enjoyable seminar, and I want to really congratulate the children of Hawthorne Den Primary, Lasswade Primary School, the St David's High, and Roslyn Primary School. For them to speak surrounded by such a rather forbidding look of a lot of faces looking around today, it doesn't look so bad, but it must have been really hard for them, and I thought they did awfully well. And the council leader is so impressed by everything that she's got a learning pit on the wall for our group meetings and refers to it constantly. And what's the FAIL is stand for? First attempt in learning. Thank you.
Councillor Muirhead.
I'll be brief, Provost. Just to echo what's been said, particularly about the presentation that we had here. And I've obviously read a bit more about this and had briefings for the director. So I know that, you know, the kids coming up there would be the best the school could put forward. They were exceptionally good, but that's not it. That's not the whole story. There's the work that's going on right across the schools, and it's been very successful. And I suppose in my working life, I've came across loads of kind of flavour of the month models for doing all sorts of particular things that never really come to anything. I see this as being different. I think, you know, it is something that does make a massive difference. And one of the big things that makes that work is the buy-in of the staff in particular. I know it's about the pupils understanding how they understand what they've got to do to learn certain things, but the buy-in of the staff is can be evidenced with the attendances and things like that we've had at the events that have been run, I think, indicate that they're buying into it big style, and I think that's the way forward, and that's what will make it succeed.
Well, Dr. Vickers, I think we can say that was a successful seminar we had that day. Oh, right, Dr. Smith, sorry.
I know that people will think that last week we fielded our top team for our young people, but I don't know if you heard the young woman talking, and she said that when she couldn't do something, she used to cry. And now, through visible learning and knowing about all the different processes, she's able to reflect on her learning. So that was really interesting from her point of view, because that young woman could have been switched off if she found things too hard. And also, last week I was at Burnbury Primary for the Annie Junior, where they did the Annie Show. And I saw a great example of visible learning, where it was an absolutely fabulous show and us as adults would have just enjoyed ourselves. And there was a couple of hitches. But at the end, the head teacher said to the children, "Did you enjoy yourself, children?" And they said, "Yes." And she said, "And what did you think of the show?" And they said, "Well, we made a couple of mistakes." And she said, "So what does that mean?" It says, "We'll sort that for tomorrow." So they weren't worried about it at all. So, you know, the confidence of like 7-year-olds and 8-year-olds up there singing their wee hearts out and knowing that there was a couple of glitches that none of us would have noticed, but they noticed and they wanted to improve it. So, you know, visible learning affects all parts of their learning. Has Grace disappeared? The conference in November is actually sold out. That, you know, Midlothian is on the map about this, about what we're doing. So, you know, it's up there. It's about engaging our teaching staff. It's about engaging our learning assistants. About everybody around that child is engaged in their learning, especially the child. Thank you.
Thank you. Council happy to accept that report. We move to item 8.6, Edinburgh, South East Scotland City Region Deal Update, a report by Kenneth Laurie, the Chief Executive.
Thank you, Provost. This report provides an update on progress towards securing a city deal for Edinburgh and the South East Scotland region. And members will recall from previous reports and from the recent briefing that city deals are formal arrangements whereby government resources are awarded to a city region to drive economic growth and also to tackle areas of poverty and deprivation within the region. And work has been ongoing for some time to try and secure a city deal for Edinburgh and South East Scotland, and our hope is that we may be able to do that either by the end of this year or in the first quarter of next year, though there are clearly some uncertainties around that timescale. At this stage, the draft proposition comprises of a number of investment propositions. These are listed in Section 3. The main elements of that, innovation hubs, such as Easterbush and Midlothian, strategic growth zones, low-carbon communities, of which Shawfair is identified as one of these, and regionally significant transport improvements. There are also a series of supporting programmes, employability and skills, business growth, digital connectivity, and low-carbon investment, as well as a proposed regional housing programme. In terms of governance, the proposal in front of you today is for a joint committee of the six councils, with the opportunity to appoint additional members from sectors such as business and higher education. The proposed role of the joint committee would be to set strategic direction, to agree investment priorities, to oversee planning and implementation activity, and to monitor and assess the level of impact of the city deal interventions. Paragraph 5 of the report notes that work is ongoing in relation to the specific projects relating to Midlothian, developing them to the business case stage. In terms of resources, an assessment of the current potential proposals across the region would suggest a level of city deal investment in the region of £2 billion, with potential to lever in up to £5 billion of private and university sector investment. Clearly, there's a long way to go. That will be the product of negotiation with the UK and Scottish governments. There will be financial requirements upon the Council, both in terms potentially of borrowing, but also in terms of providing an upfront financial injection to the city deal. And in the context of a £2 billion city deal, where up to £1.8 billion may come from the two governments, Midlothian's pro rata share would be in the region of £12 million. And it's proposed that the Council recommend that from the Capital Fund, though clearly the final amount will be dependent on the projects that come forward as part of the final city deal proposal. The recommendations are at Section 8. I want to propose a minor change in relation to the second recommendation. I think it should read, the Council approves in principle the formation of a joint committee of the six councils, and that its scope of operation is prepared for further approval by the six councils. I think the way it was written suggested that that committee was drafting its own terms of reference, and I think the work has to be done on the terms of reference. We agree in principle that there should be a joint committee. That's a request today, and that the detail will come back for further approval by this and the other five councils. Thank you, Provost.
Thank you, Mr. Laurie. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you very much. I've always been really enthusiastic about the city deal, and I still remain enthusiastic, but after Brexit, there's lots of clarification needed, and I'm not sure if it puts in jeopardy the whole city-region deal and all the investment and all the hope that it was bringing. But now that Cameron and maybe Osborne are leaving the centre stage, and they were the people who were very proactive in promoting this, to me it feels like it might not happen, but I think we should still be prepared just in case. And £12 million is a lot of money for us to be contributing, and I am mindful about what the Labour Party were saying previously about, especially Councillor Montgomery, who's not here, he was advocating that we should look into a rail line all the way from Edinburgh into Penicuik. And I think with the small contribution that we've got to make, that a railway at this stage is definitely out of the question, especially when Brexit has caused all this uncertainty. And then I had a look on maps, etc., about where a possible train station in Pennycook could be. And I spoke with one of my colleagues from Pennycook, and he was explaining it would need to be around the Pomathorne area, which would not be acceptable to the people in Pennycook. So for that reason, I think that would have to be discounted from our city deal projects, and I also recommend that we do accept these recommendations, but I do have concerns about the future for it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm very happy, and I don't quite share my leader's concern. This is something that really is likely to happen come what may. But what I would question is whether we want to take 12 million out of the capital fund, because that would leave the capital fund with only 3 million. And I wonder if there isn't a better way of funding that than through the capital fund. Could I have a comment?
Mr. Fairley.
Provost, as the Chief Executive highlighted, the city deal is still at a very early stage in terms of the funding mechanism and the actual contribution that the Council would require to make. So it is very much earmarking capital fund resources to support the Council's injection. The other alternative would be to include a provision in the General Services Capital Plan, which in turn would give rise to a borrowing requirement which would impact on the revenue budget. So given where we are in the city deal process and the negotiations that are ongoing, I certainly felt it was more prudent to earmark the capital fund rather than have a knock-on effect on other budgets. I think it is equally important for the Council to be able to demonstrate it to both UK and Scottish governments that it has made a financial commitment in within its available resources to support City Deal, and I think doing it this way helps us demonstrate that we are serious and we've got the financial backing there ready to go as the projects come forward. Thanks.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. I feel there's a bit of a contradiction here. Talking in 3.3.3 about low carbon communities, and in 3.3.1, the flagship, as far as Midlothian's concerned, seems to be to build two new roads. I've mentioned this before, that Edinburgh is getting a huge investment, it seems, out of this, which involves futuristic light rail. Midlothian's getting roads. It just seems to be history repeating itself. I've said my piece on this before, that you go to, I know we don't want to do things the way Europe does them anymore, but in Europe, if you want to shift large numbers of people, you do it by light rail, or you do it by heavy rail, and you find a route. If we want to build a motorway, it's compulsory purchase. We build it where we need it to go. We don't say, oh, the local population might not like this. We've got to look at what is strategic for the people of Midlothian, and new roads, to my mind, was strategic in the 60s, it's not strategic now.
Councillor Emery.
Yeah, thanks, Provost. I think everybody will know that I've been very favourable about the concept of the city region deals ever since it was mentioned. And in a sense, it's just unfortunate that we're actually not a lot further forward than we are today. And, you know, maybe if things had been signed off 6 months ago, I wouldn't be as worried as the council leader is. But nevertheless, the one thing that I'm a little bit concerned about is the lack of ambition in the whole thing. I mean, you know, and I'll take infrastructure in particular. Notwithstanding what Councillor Baxter said, I mean, I think there's been a lot of money put into walking, into cycling and into public transport. And whether you like it or not, when you're outside of the city, and let's remember, we all live outside of the city, there's a different concept, and if you look at the figures, you will see that car ownership, yes, in a sense, and car usability has actually increased, despite all the public interventions with regard to walking, cycling, and indeed public transport. But for the first time since I've been elected member, I'm now getting more and more inquiries regarding how you actually get about the county and indeed how you get in and out of Edinburgh. Now, I've never had that before, and I suppose as night follows day, because we've had a housing boom with more and more people moving into Midlothian, you've got to get them mobile to move around. And as I say, nobody, you can't make people use public transport, you can't make people walk, you can't make people cycle. You can try your level best, but you've got to accept if there's a balance comes into it. And the difficulty for me, in a sense, is that we haven't kept up with the infrastructure needs of a Midlothian growth pattern. And I think that, you know, there's a lack of ambition, dare I say, within that. Now, that doesn't rule out anything. It rules everything in actual fact. And I'm not wanting to get into a spat today about whether there was a spur road or not a spur road. I don't want to get into a spat today about whether there's light rail or heavy rail or tram trains or whatever you want to call them. I actually do think, though, we may be missing an opportunity if the city region deal's still on the table, and I accept wholeheartedly it might not be on the table, or the formula might not be the same as we've grown to expect, and that's what the Chief Executive and certainly Mr Johnson will have to carry on and you know, try to get to the finer points of that. But my worry and concern is that we've maybe not been ambitious enough, and, you know, notwithstanding what we are putting in the bush as a world leader, I've got no question unequivocally about supporting the need to get movement in and out of there. I've got no problem whatsoever about that. I do actually think, though, that the rest of Midlothian hasn't kept up in infrastructural terms with regard to the housing boom that we've had and are going to continue to have, hopefully, fingers crossed, if the housing developers continue to come in and build in Midlothian. So I'm a bit concerned about that, and I would certainly like the Chief Executive and the leader who sit on the group for the City Region deal to actually articulate that kind of vision. So that it's not just, dare I say, just as a finished promise, it's not just about Midlothian. It's all the councils now that surround Edinburgh are accepting that Edinburgh will be the growth pattern and we'll get certain bits and pieces. But the big thing is how you move people. And that's a big, big concern. Transport Scotland have failed miserably to do anything about the A720 city bypass, and we continue to knock doors there, and we continue to get officials to start looking at what they can and cannot do. But thus far, nothing has been done. We can't get people across our communities anymore because of lack of infrastructure, and I really do worry that we're starting to clog the whole area up, and if we don't do something about that, and I believe City Deal could do something about that, that would give us a very, very good return on investment.
Thank you. Councillor Mulligan.
Provost, thank you. Like Councillor Devanc, I think the thing that stood out for me here that concerned me about the report is indeed the fact that we have £15.3 million in capital here, and we're going to side along £12 million, leaving ourselves just over £3 million for any upcoming capital projects that might come along, which would, I don't think, is a reasonable comfort. Now, that quite simply means that if something comes along that needs capital funding, we're going to have to borrow, which is going to add to the already incredible strain that's on the revenue account to repay that borrowing. I did took the point of speaking to Gary about that prior to the meeting, and his assurance was that they expect to replenish that through capital receipts coming in through the council. And I'm hopeful that that will happen sooner rather than later. It is quite disappointing then, and the fact that we're going to just simply dismiss the rail link to Penicuik without having a proper look at it. I thought we had accepted at the seminar Councillor Montgomery's point that it would make common sense to give that consideration. As far as I'm aware, unless Ian Johnson tells me different, we have a protected rail route to Penicuik that's protected through the local plan and certainly was protected in all the years that I dealt with planning. So I think that protected rail route's link is still there. The station part I couldn't tell you about, but certainly the link I'm sure is there, because it would help people coming from Edinburgh out to the Roslin Centre, out to the biotech centres and to Penicuik, but more importantly it takes cars off the street in Edinburgh. I am disappointed, very much like Councillor Baxter, that there's very little emphasis being put on the public transport sector to other areas, that we are simply looking at sort of upgrading the roads. Now, don't get me wrong, I fully support the upgrading of the Sheriff Hall roundabout. I think it's something that urgently needs done, absolutely urgently. When you're queuing to get out of Bonnerig in the morning, it's taking you half an hour just to get out of Bonnerig, never mind get anywhere else. See, once you get out, that seems to be okay, but actually getting out is the queue. The only way to deal with that is to actually help with the areas. We already have that, but we have a local plan coming along that will deal with that. I'm like Russell, I actually find it a bit unambitious, if I'm being honest here, that I had thought we would be looking at a lot of other projects that would actually be meaningful to the public out there. Now, I'm no doubt running what's actually here, but I had thought we would have probably been looking across the board and trying to come away from just looking at roads on yourself and upgrading them to looking at a joint effort with public transport.
Councillor Rosie.
If I could just touch on the part there. Councillor Mulligan states there that he's of the opinion he thinks that there's a protected route. Does anyone know, does any of the officers know where that would be, or does he have an indication where it is and where the start of that line would be in the Penicuik end and where it would end up? Can anyone inform us?
Mr. Johnson.
Provost, there was a protected line shown in previous local plans. The things have moved on, and probably two things to mention. One, the proposal for the relief road of the A701. Really, part of that is it's not just the A701 having a new relief road, which is proposed in the plan, but also it means that the existing alignment of the A701 would become the public transport corridor for potential for whatever form of public transport would be used. The other issue to mention is that the Penicuik heavy rail link, the studies that were done on that, and which members are aware of, shows an alignment running from Penicuik itself and then up to joining with the Borders rail line just to the south in the S Bank area. As per the seminar on City Deal, where it was agreed that, it was noted that the projects which are being identified at the seminar are not firmed up, they've not been inked in, and that's the same for all of the six council areas. It's still very much work in progress in terms of economic modelling and looking at priorities and also affordability for those schemes, but still in the frame to be looked at. But obviously at the end of the day, decisions to be made here in this chamber is the heavy rail to Penicuik, and to see, just to bottom out with that, just what the issues are in relation to affordability, viability, etc.
Councillor Rosie.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Johnson. Just on that, though, I mean, you've said it would go to S Bank, but where would it commence at the Penicuik end, and what route would it then take from Penicuik to get to S Bank?
Well, the studies which have been undertaken look at a station which, as one of the members has mentioned already, Councillor Johnson, in the Pomathorne area. And it pretty much would follow the alignment of what's the disused railway line heading in a north-easterly direction up towards S Bank.
Councillor Rosie.
So we're talking here about, is that the old Peebles line, then which would mean there's about a mile outside Penicuik Centre itself and is uphill all the way from there, just about.
Prof, it's probably a detail that I'm happy to pick up with Councillor Rosie and local members, and I'd need to actually go through the study itself. But the essence of it is that, and what we've been looking at in terms of cost viability, etc., for that particular route would be initially the principle of heavy rail link to Penicuik, and what the ramifications of that would be.
Thank you. Mr. Laurie.
Thank you, Provost. Just picking up on a number of comments from members, I guess this is it's illustrative of some of the challenges within City Deal. I suppose the first thing I'd say is, in terms of ambition, I think as members around this table would expect, you know, Midlothian is very ambitious, but we're certainly working within significant financial constraints. We're working within the constraints that come from six councils with varying views coming together to try and form a single city deal about the kind of projects that appeal to governments, and the views of the Scottish and UK governments are perhaps rather different in that regard, and also the need for substantive business cases, projects which are demonstrate significant growth in terms of GVA. And I have to say that the project roundabout the Bush, for example, of all the projects in City Deal, is one that demonstrates the greatest increase GVA. And that is because the relatively small infrastructure cost would potentially open up a huge amount of investment from the University of Edinburgh in terms of growing and increasing that facility, which, as members have already pointed out, is world leading. So it is a complicated and challenging process. I do think that from a Midlothian perspective, we are trying to be very ambitious, not least in terms of the skills programme, our centres of excellence proposals, our ambitions in relation to education. But I very much welcome the comments of members, and certainly as we go back into these discussions, we'll endeavour to take all of these on board.
Thank you, Mr. Lai. Okay, is Council happy to move forward with the recommendations in this report? Thank you. We move to item 8.7, Adult Care and Health Budget Setting 2016-17, report by Mrs. McHugh.
Thank you, Provost. This report explains the new budget setting arrangements for healthcare service in the light of the new integrated joint board. It also outlines the commitments of the new social care monies that were agreed at the last budget, as well as setting out proposals to reduce expenditure in adult social care in 2017-18. Section 2 sets out the background to the report. The Integrated Joint Board took up its full responsibilities on the 1st of October 2016 with a delegated budget of £111 million. That's from both health and social care. In Council delegated functions to the IGB and the budget associated with those functions. And in some respects, the delegation of Council budget was relatively straightforward. There have, however, been significant challenges in relation to the NHS budget, and that related to two issues. One is that many of or a proportion of the health services that are delegated to the IJB are not managed by the local Health and Social Care Partnership. Rather, they are resources that are located within acute or in other services that are managed elsewhere in Lothian. And the other challenge has been largely around the gap in NHS Lothian's budget. The IJB is still working with that in relation to its position in relation to the funding that is available. Clearly, these new arrangements create complexity in relation to budget setting, and in particular in relation to responsibility for the management of savings and efficiencies. The IGB and Council and NHS Lothian are faced with increased demand for services because of the nature of illness, demographics, etc., as members are very aware, but also with reducing resources from within Council and NHS Lothian. So the new arrangements raises questions about how the savings should be managed. The IGB has responsibility for the strategic direction of services. It also has responsibility for service design, but the day-to-day management of services and managing services in the most efficient way possible remains with the Council. And I guess this is year one of those arrangements, so it's really important that Council and IGB work together around these arrangements to make sure that we're getting them right for both parties and making best use of all the resources that we do have at our disposal, and also maximising the benefits that can be derived from integration. In terms of efficiencies within adult care, over the past 4 years, adult care has delivered 3.4 million savings from its budgets. In the current financial year, we're looking at 291,000 savings, but we're also needing to implement a recovery plan to address an overspend or an overcommitment, although our end-of-year outturn was much lower than what had been projected throughout the year. We still inherited very significant overcommitments within our spend. So the Directorate is working very hard to reduce those commitments. In terms of adult care going forward, the Directorate is proposing that we should, in planning for efficiencies in 17-18, that we look to as a first step in that challenge that's presented around reducing spend, that we should aim to reduce our spend by 1.5 million. And we'd seek to do that through our operational activity. In particular, we're looking at the redesign and the review of care packages to take on board new ways of, through our transformation activity, of delivering care in new ways. Examples of that are increased use of telecare, also looking in particular at how we're providing overnight support and cover, looking at new ways of doing that, and also looking at ensuring that the services that we've got around reablement, etc., that we're making full use of those in the care packages that are being provided. So that involves extensive reviewing of care packages and making sure that we're getting the design right around the individual while still meeting needs and delivering outcomes. We're also looking at the new developments in Pennycook, with the planned opening of facilities there for 12 people with very complex needs, and looking at a significant reduction in the cost of service delivery in those arrangements. Clearly, the arrangements for delivery of savings in adult care also need to be considered alongside the savings in NHS Lothian spend. In the current financial year, we're looking at very challenging savings within the NHS Lothian budgets of 1.9 from budgets of 47 million. Paragraph 2.8 sets out an update in relation to where we're at with the commitments in relation to the 3.6 million social care fund. Members will be aware that much of this was already covered in the budget setting arrangements, but the ambition was that the additionality included within that would also provide capacity for transformation, but also one of the key commitments in it is the delivery of the living wage across the whole of the social care sector. The current commitments against the 3.6 million are set out in 2.8. Some of them are still inconclusive. We're in the midst of contractual discussions with or reviewing our contracts with social care providers. We're in the midst of some transformational projects that still haven't been concluded. But at the moment, it's looking like as if we're to take full year effect, it would mean the full commitment of the 3.6 million. However, there's still some of that money is committed against projects that are transformation, like the continuation of the hospital to home service, the development of dementia beds within the new buyer's care home, etc., as well as the additionality around demographics. And there's still some money, approximately half a million left, to ensure some additionality around the strategic plan. In looking at the recommendations in section 4, Council's asked to note this report, but also in particular note the need for ongoing dialogue with the IGB about efficiencies and around the whole process around the budget setting agenda. And secondly, also to agree to a council seminar after the recess to allow us to consider more widely, now that the IGB has been in operation since April, to consider more widely the impact of the IGB on council governance arrangements and how we work together to ensure that council members are fully informed of the work of the IGB, but also closely in contact with it. Happy to respond to questions.
Thank you, Mrs. McHugh. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you very much. There's lots going on in the IGB, so the seminar is most definitely welcome for all my colleagues to find out where our actual difficulties are, what we're good at and how we plan to move forward. When I first read this report, it was like, oh no, it's all money, money, difficulties, 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 but it is an opportunity, and the main driver for us is to deliver good quality care for the residents in Midlothian. And yes, we have these efficiencies to make, but that gives us more thought for how we do things properly. The other thing is, it's good that our residents are living longer, but with that comes lots of added health issues and dementia being the biggest growing market, if you like, that we've got that we need to cater for. And that's why we need to look at the way we do things in new buyers, for example, to change review how we do things there and go along with some things that the Care Inspectorate have recommended that we do, and also that we take all the review for new buyers must go back to the Business Transformation Group and have that agreed there. And there was one other thing I wanted to add, another recommendation to hear, that in future all minutes of the Midlothian IGB should come to Council for noting. I think that's really important so that my colleagues are aware of what was agreed at these meetings. They will not be for approval because that's for a different route, but at least if they come to the Council for noting. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Councillor Burhead.
Yeah, during your contribution, Evelyn, you mentioned inherited overcommitments in your spend. I'm not expecting necessarily answers just now, but what it prompts me to ask is, in the recommendation two, about the seminar in order to explore more depth the respective governance responsibilities, could we include some indication of the financial position for the rest of the councillors that are on the IGB as well? Because I think that would be helpful, because I'd like certainly a wee bit more information in terms of overcommitments that you feel that were there prior to the IGB's coming into being.
Yes, I can include that, and but also to remember that financial reporting continues to happen within the council. But yes, happy to include that within the seminar. Yeah.
Okay. Are we happy to accept the recommendations as amended by Councillor Johnson? Thank you. Item 8.8, School Streets, a report by Mr Muffett, Head of Commercial Operations.
Thanks, Provost. The purpose of this report is to bring to Council's attention a project to introduce school streets at two of Midlothian schools, subject obviously to consultation, funding awards and the necessary legal process. Members may be aware of recent pilots in both City of Edinburgh and East Lothian councils to introduce school streets. And it involves a legal order which essentially bans traffic during certain times of the day, notably when children are coming and going from school. It's proposed to trial the school streets in two school areas, Kings Park Primary in Dalkeith and Lasswade Primary in Bonnerig. And the first thing I would say is that I'm sure every member would welcome such a venture at any of the schools within their own particular wards. And these two schools that have been chosen, whilst they're considered as typical, they do in fact have prolonged histories of issues around the drop-off areas and indiscriminate parking. And for members' attention, the plans at the back of the council chamber show the two schools and potentially the areas that would be impacted, and also the kind of signage that would go up in these areas. But I think what's also important to point out that Police Scotland specifically have supported or are supporting this project, and without their support and the necessary enforcement, it wouldn't be the success that we hope that it will indeed be. So turning essentially to the recommendations, I'm asking Council to support the introduction of school streets at Kings Park and Lasswade, and note that we'll bring a report back 12 months after implementation and advise members how those two trials have gone.
Thank you, Mr Muffett. Councillor Rosie.
Thanks, Provost. Thanks for that, Ricky. I know from complaints that I receive in my own ward and from wards throughout Midlothian that this is an issue that concerns parents and residents who live in close proximity to the schools. We must encourage pupils to walk or cycle to school and dissuade parents and those who are caring for the children from driving them to school whenever possible. I think that all the schools in our wards, I think we can think of many that could fit into this category and are worthy of attention. But and having spoken to a police person who knows the schools, and that they certainly are of the opinion that the two that we've chosen are the best ones within Midlothian to participate in the initiative. And so therefore I would move that we accept the recommendations at 5.1 and 5.2.
Councillor Constable.
Thank you, Provost. Yes, and particularly having contributed some of the environmental funding from my funds to this in Lasswade Primary, I'm very much in favour of this. Councillor Baxter and I attended a neighbourhood planning, I think, wasn't it, meeting, and it was quite vociferous. Some of the parking that was going on, the conflict with local residents, and I'm really welcoming this and hope it works out well. It seems to have worked well in East Lothian and Edinburgh, so I hope it does here.
Councillor Milligan.
Thanks, Provost. I haven't any doubt in whatsoever this will be welcome in all quarters. They never are, because people will only want to walk to school. But the reality is, having attended on numerous occasions a school and dealt with a lot of complaints, and not just complaints from local residents who are being plagued with bad parking, actually standing and listening to parents and the kids themselves complaining that it's now dangerous. And indeed, the last time I attended with some of Ricky's officers on the safer routes to school officers that deal with these issues, and stood and watched in amazement as two parents arrived. Julie dumped her cars on the zigzag lines right at the gate where the kids were coming out of the school, and then stood and argued with the chair of the PTA who was there that there would only be 5 minutes they were going to pick up their kids, and effectively dismissed any comments for the officers yourselves or that, and just simply went ahead and left their cars on these zigzag lines, leaving other kids in danger of leaving that school in a dangerous situation. So therefore, it is quite clear at Lastwade Primary School, which is the one of the ones I know, that we have a serious problem. We also have that serious problem surrounding other primary schools. So I'm hopeful if this is a success, we can get it rolled out and quite quickly, once we're quite happy with it. It has to be that everybody is consulted here. It's clear that, you know, if you just simply put this on one side of the school, then what will happen is the parents will just shift to the other side of the school with the car. So we need to make sure that the roads surrounding the primary schools are all included. And I see on the map there that they are, and there's sort of consideration for even slightly further afield to see whether the residents think that. I think that's a good idea. And I think it's right to go right at the start saying and ask the public, what do they think? As I say, I'm more than certain there'll be one or two will come back with, well, we can't do that. I maybe want to just touch a wee bit on the fact that Jim talked about earlier, and that was on catchment areas, no catchment areas, and I accept there isn't catchment areas for primary schools, but one of the things that will come up and always does is effectively people who have for perhaps primary school and primary 1, 2, 3, etc., that are at a school, yet they've been unsuccessful in getting a nursery place and they're having to go to another destination to get their youngster to nursery. And their argument is quite simply going to be, I didn't have time to get from one school to another walking with a nursery child or a primary school child. So therefore, I think it's important, as Jim points out, that where possible, that we try to make sure that we can accommodate within the catchment areas when we're coming to this to make it easier. The exemptions that are in there, for example, for taxis, for local residents, and for delivery motors and that, Ricky, I welcome. I would also hope that we would be quite sensible in looking at special circumstances, that perhaps there could be an appeal system where somebody with special circumstances who has a child at the school could apply to get a permit if the circumstances so much weren't. I'm not going to go into examples because I could give you dozens and dozens of ways to do that, but it would be sensible just to have that to make sure that there isn't any anomalies work out, and I'm sure everybody will be quite happy to support that. So, like the rest of the members around the table, quite happy to support this paper.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. Yes, I would like to echo those sentiments, particularly where Councillor Milligan talks about the displacement of the problem to wider streets. And I think that's a very important point, that this should not be seen in isolation, but everything we do in this council with regards to planning should be looking towards modal shift. When we build new housing estates, we want to build new schools next to cycle routes, next to places where people find it easier to get public transport, for instance. It's no good using the stick approach all the time. Sometimes we have to use the carrot approach. So, yes, I do support this, but we must constantly think about getting people out of the cars and into more sustainable methods of transport whenever we design anything.
OK. We're happy to accept the recommendations in that report then and take on Councillor Mulligan's comments. Mr. Buffett. Yes. Thank you.
Thanks, Provost. It's meeting of 23rd September 2014. Members will be aware of the report that came forward asking for support for remedial works at Iron Mills Park. And this is on the path that leads from Cemetery Road down to Iron Mills Park itself. And essentially at that time, members agreed to a localised solution, which it was outlined that perhaps may not be successful and further works may be required. Unfortunately, there has been further movement, quite significant movement, at this location, and that followed probably the wettest December on record in 2015, and essentially the access route itself had to be closed in the interests of public safety. As I said before, the council report in 2014 looked at some localised solutions. Since then, as I say, further movement, and we've had further assessment done of the causes of the recent slippage. And on page 47, where we look at the consultant's report, Ironside Farrer, I've been looking at this in quite some detail. And as a consequence, they've came forward with three options for remediation. Essentially, the option that we as officers and Ironside Farrer are coming forward with in terms of a solution that has a high degree of success is an anchoring solution, which is stated in the report as option two. And essentially, that will involve driving anchors into the existing ground to support a network of ties to secure the ground. We have, over the last few months, we actually put in a couple of these anchors, and whilst they've not been stressed as the this final solution would be, they're still in place despite, and if, I'm sure local members will have seen the site itself, despite some quite significant movement. Moving forward then to the summary page on page 51. Essentially, we're coming forward with this wider soil anchoring solution, which has an estimated cost of £170,000, and that would allow the slope to be stabilised and the path to be reinstated, which would then allow locals particularly to reuse that route. What it would also do is a degree of comfort in terms of local properties, in terms of mitigating any future movement of the land specifically that's adjacent. So in terms of the recommendations, Council's asked to note the contents of the consultant's report, agree to progress option two, which essentially is the wider soil anchoring solution, at a cost of £0.17 million, and approve the addition to the General Services Capital Plan.
Thank you, Mr. Moffat. Councillor Rosie.
Thanks, Provost. Thanks, Ricky, for the report. Unfortunately, the previous work to stabilise this slope, the slope at Iron Mills Park, has not worked as well as we had hoped, and it's again now closed to the public. At present, the only two routes into the park are along either Iron Mills Road, which is not really a safe access as it doesn't have a pavement or pathway, some parts of it, and the other one's a muddy path, I believe, off Lugton Bray. So that's one of the reasons. But we are presented with the three options for the remedial work. Now, option one, that's the most expensive, but does not remove the risk, and there will be further landslips, and it's only got apparently a 50% chance of being successful in the long term. Option two is the middle cost wise, and offers the best chance that there will be no further work in the future. Option three, it's the cheapest option, and so it will reduce the risk of further work in the future. It's not as robust as option two, and the saving is only £7,000, and I would not consider that to be good value. And I think Ricky made the point there, extremely important is the mitigating circumstances with neighbouring properties to this landslip. So I think we really have to move forward on this, get it fixed, and option two would be my recommendation.
Councillor Bryant.
Thank you, Provost. I just echo Councillor Rosie's remarks. I mean, I personally think the piling solution would probably be the best, but we can't get the equipment in to put them in. So it's a very special place in Dalkeith, and it'd be
excellent, get it opened up again. So I ask you to accept the recommendations.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. When this land slipped the last time, I remember questioning whether we should maybe have gone for the more permanent solution. I'm not saying that we necessarily should have done, because it was very expensive, and I believe that the local residents were a bit concerned about how it would look. But in the light of that, what I would like to ask about is, at the beginning of Section 2, it says it was following the wettest December on record in 2015. Now, records are being broken consistently due to climate change in terms of, for example, the amount of water being deposited. We've seen it in Paris just in the last month. We've seen it in the UK last winter. Now, the question I have to ask is, are our consultants building into their models the increased risk due to the larger amount of water which is falling on unstable areas like this? Because that might change the recommendations that they may give us. Because, OK, in the past we've said the wettest December on record, it'll probably happen once every 100 years, and therefore we can afford to take a risk. But if it's happening every 4 years, as it seems to be happening now, then maybe we would take a different approach. And I would just like confirmation that our consultants are actually taking cognizance of changes due to climate change.
What the consultants have actually done is, as well as the anchoring system, there is inherent within this solution additional drainage that's provided, so that addresses the issues of further wet rainfall.
Councillor Bennett.
Thanks, Provost. I would just like to echo the sentiments. I mean, the bridge has been there for 100 years. It's not as if it's... This has just happened overnight, and I think if we're going to go with the advice of the structural engineers, and I would like to endorse Derek and Jim for option two to get this done and get this walkway back into operation.
Councillor Devink.
Yeah, I totally support option two, but I would like to have an assurance from the officials that this time they will actually take into account the advice of the consultant engineers. Had they done that last time, we might not have had the problems that subsequently occurred. So could we have an undertaking that the recommendations of the consultants this time will be fully adhered to?
Yeah, essentially the three options came from the consultants, and the consensus was that option two of the three options is the one that it should be progressed. So we are supporting the consultants in that regard.
Councillor Beattie.
Thank you, Provost. I think it's no secret that local residents have been extraordinarily frustrated by the lack of use of this area for some time by this route. And when we have such a commitment to improving health and well-being, and that means accessing our open spaces easily, this obviously has been very disappointing. I am concerned about some of the issues that were referred to by Councillor Baxter, and I'm well aware that climate change is an ongoing phenomenon, and a lot of the modelling is well acknowledged by global scientists that it's very difficult to have confidence that these models are accurate, as we may well have had a period in our history where this was not the first occasion of such climate change, but this is the first time we have any knowledge of it that's being recorded. So modelling is catching up with each passing year. And on that basis, do we have any quantifiable definition of how reliable this solution that's being proposed may be, assuming that we support option two, which, as far as I'm able to tell from the information available, would seem to be the best way forward?
What I can do is I can provide additional information. I don't have it to hand, but I can provide that for you.
Okay. Council happy to accept recommendations in this report. Thank you. Item 8.10, Annual Treasury Management Report 2015-16, a report by the Head of Finance and Integrated Service Support.
Provost, the report before Council today informs members of the Council's Treasury Management activity in 2015-16 and of the year-end position, which is reflected in the other financial reports also on today's agenda. Section 2 of the report sets out the main points in respect of the year, with a detailed report provided for members' attention, the Annual Treasury Management Review 2015-16, enclosed with the report as Appendix 1. Provost, today Council is asked to note the Treasury Management Annual Review 2015-16.
Thank you, Mr. Fairley. Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. I think this is a really good report. I know it's just a snapshot in time, but so far we seem to be in a positive position in terms of what it shows us and leading the chart in terms of Scotland. So that's a really good thing. I just have one question, and it's just on the back of kind of financial turmoil, etc. And it's just if you could confirm when the Treasury Management Strategy will next look to review our current investment and loan strategy, given the fact that we might have some change in interest rates and such like.
In terms of the strategy itself, we would bring a mid-year review of the strategy up to Council in probably September Council, and then we would review and bring forward the strategy for approval again next February, at the same time as the budget set. That creates a strategic framework in which we'd operate, and review activity is going on a daily basis in terms of moves in the market and what the opportunities and risks, etc. are. So continual review of the operation within the policy boundaries, the mid-year review of the policy, the strategy, and then the next, looking forward to next year's strategy that will come before Council.
Thank you. Council, happy to note this report. Thank you. Item 8.11, General Services Capital Plan 2015-16 Final Outturn, a report by Mr. Fairley, Head of Finance and Integrated Service Support.
Thanks, Provost. This report now sets out the position with General Services Capital Plan for last year. Some highlights: expenditure in the year totaled £18.872 million, which resulted in a small net overspend of £428,000. Funding for capital investment totaled £18.077 million, and that left a net borrowing requirement for the year of £795,000. At the year-end, the debt associated with the Council's general fund asset base was just over £100 million, and that's within the existing debt cap that we have through the capital strategy of £114 million. Again, today, Provost, I'm asking Council to note the report.
Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. Thanks, Gary. I'm happy to note the contents of the report, and just bring it back to the EU once again, because I think it's by looking at this report and seeing the things, the types of programmes that we're doing in Midlothian, it does bring it home how important that some of those income streams are. And I think we do have to be very prudent and careful about how we tackle this. I'm mindful of not being too alarmist, and I'm not trying to do that, but I do worry, and I certainly hope that the UK Government acts quickly to provide reassurances. But overall, good paper, and happy to note.
Council, happy to note this report as well. Thank you. Okay, I'll start again. Item 8.12, housing revenue account, revenue and capital final outturn 2015-16 and capital plan 2016-17 to 2018-19. A report by Mr Fairley, Head of Finance and Integrated Service. Support.
Thanks, Provost. We now turn our attention to the housing revenue account and the financial performance for last year. Again, some highlights. In summary, Council's capital investment in housing stock totaled £12.859 million, which in turn resulted in a borrowing requirement of £7.118 million. That borrowing requirement is funded through the rental income stream for the housing assets. We saw an underspend on the revenue account for the year of approximately £1 million, and that's for the reasons which are set out in the report. As a consequence, at the year end, the HRE reserve amounted to £24.915 million. And again, the longer-term investment plans of the Council and the financial modelling indicate that all but approximately £2 million of that sum will be required to support the current investment plans. Provost, again, Council's asked to note the contents of the report.
Thank you. Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. Thanks, Gary. Happy to move the report, but I just want to highlight one point that often pops up from all sides of the benches, is just about the infrastructure and the quality of housing, and just a point to note about how that strategy is now paying off with less reactive repairs. We're now saving money and able to reduce spend and make life better for residents as well. So that's always a good thing.
OK, Council, I intend moving on to 8.14, then I can call a comfort break if you're quite happy to go along with that. OK, thank you. Item 8.13 is a to-follow report, and it's the financial statements for the year ended 31st of March 2016. Again, a report by Mr Fairley.
Provost, we're required in accordance with the Local Authority Accounts Regulations to bring the unaudited accounts forward to Council, and these have, as such, the accounts have been prepared, circulated to members and will be submitted to the Controller of Audit by the end of the month. The financial performance which is set out in the accounts is encapsulated in the other reports that have been on today's agenda, and accordingly it's recommended that Council simply endorse the report and approve the financial statements.
Thank you, Mr Fairley. Councillor Parry.
Happy to move, Provost.
Councillor Beattie.
Thank you, Provost. I'd like to ask a question on page 142. At the halfway down the page, there's reference to the 995,000 for care packages. And while obviously I don't wish to stray into any detail around that, it would be inappropriate in the context of this item. I'm really asking a question about the work is ongoing to find more sustainable solutions. And I wondered... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I've drifted. Apologies, Provost, if I can come back to that at the appropriate time. My apologies.
Okay. Could you turn your microphone off, please?
Thank you.
Thank you. The Council happy to accept that report? Thank you. Item 8.14, Financial Monitoring 2015-16, a General Fund Revenue. Again, a report by Mr Fairley, Head of Finance and Integrated Service. Support.
Provost, this is the final financial report on today's agenda, and it sets out the performance against revenue budget for general fund services for last year. As summarised in Section 2 and detailed in the appendices, there was a net underspend of £270,000 for the year, and this represents an improvement from the performance that was reported to Council at quarter three. And again, the most significant movements from quarter three are set out in the report itself. Section 2.3 sets out the movement on the general fund reserve for the year, and that gives rise to an unallocated reserve at the year end of £16.774 million. I suppose what I should say at that point is, for all the financial reports, these are based on the unaudited accounts, and there is a risk that through the audit process that some of the figures may change, but hopefully not. Provost, I think best pause at this point, take any questions from members may have for myself or colleagues in terms of the detailed of the performance during the year. Otherwise, Council is asked to note the contents of the report, consider the financial position and the context of the earlier financial strategy.
Thank you, Mr. Fairley. Councillor Beattie.
Thanks, Provost, and apologies for earlier. I was getting excited at the prospect of ongoing items. My question's on page 142, and the final line refers to work being ongoing to find more sustainable solutions to these issues, which will take effect from June 16. I wondered, where are we on that? Because clearly these are imperatives for us to make financial provision for, but equally we must have concern about effective management. And I wondered whether or not, if it's not appropriate for information to be given in this moment, I'd be grateful for information offline.
I think given the nature of the spend and the impacts on so few residents of Midlothian, it might be better to go into that offline with the appropriate head of service.
Councillor Barry. Councillor Drink.
Could I just point out on page 132 that there was a little slip of the typewriter. It's earmarked budget carried forward from 216 to 217. I discussed this earlier with Mr. Fairley, but I think we should all be aware that that is a mistake, a typing mistake.
Okay, noted. Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. I think as much has been said as necessary about being prudent and EU and all that jazz. But I do just want to make one point, and that is that I'm pleased that the administration was incredibly sensible and prudent and didn't utilise any of our reserves further than the last budget. And going forward, I know this will become increasingly important. And I know I've mentioned it again. I've mentioned it before, but I'm going to mention it again, and I mean it genuinely, and that I would like to see a cross-party approach to how we take forward financial strategies, and I would extend an invitation again to colleagues to take forward and the Business Transformation Steering Group, genuinely.
Councillor Milligan.
And again, I prefer to get the previous answers we gave. Provost, just for the sake of clearing things up, could I ask officers to look at page 140, and that's the home to school transport, where it says demand was higher than set in the budget. What we're having there is an underspend, so I don't know how the wording with that can be. I think the wording was used at quarter three and has they been changed when there was a predicted overspend. That now looks like it's going to be an underspend, so it's maybe worth clearing that up. The area that I'm concerned about is on page 138, and that's environmental health and trading standards, where it looks like we're going to spend an additional £8,000 to £9,000. Now, that's been put down to the shared service agreement with East Lothian Council came to an end. Can I ask what's been done to try and keep that going? Because it seems an efficient way of trying to cut costs, where here we are as a cost sharing with East Lothian Council no longer takes place in the year 16-17. Why is that and what's been done about that? Because the last reports we had, Ian, were that was working very well. There's nothing came in front of us to say that there's problems with that. So why has that happened and what's been done to try and discuss this with the adjoining council? And, you know, why was nothing done politically to alert different political groups so as that we could have made representation across party to the other groups in East Lothian Council?
Provost, on that particular issue, as members will know, there was a pilot arrangement involving the two services, that was environmental health and trading standards, which commenced
two years ago, and there was a pilot period of a year to see how things would progress. It turned out, in relation to trading standards, that pilot proved successful, and as a consequence of that, then it was taken forward by the two councils and confirmed through reports here and through and at East Lothian, so that there is now establishing a joint shared service for trading standards, and that is something which is headed up by the manager here, trading standards manager here in Midlothian, and that is just establishing itself. In terms of environmental health, then the product of the pilot was such that the expected benefits that would have accrued from that were just not showing up to be the case. And so therefore, through further discussion between the two councils and further reports, it was concluded that they did not want to extend the pilot beyond that. I haven't got the particular figures in front of me, which is the query on figures, but there is, if it's showing a particular deficit, because that was an expectation of income through the shared service arrangement or through the pilot arrangement, when the pilot stopped, then that there is to be a regularisation of that account, which will show up in terms of next year.
I'm not sure that answered the question. I'm actually not sure what went wrong. The last reports we had, I'm sure, told us this was all going well. You talk about it didn't accrue the benefits. What benefits? You know, what was the report? And if it was a pilot, has there been a report back that I've missed? Because I didn't seem to can recall seeing it. However, that'll not be the first time I've missed that that's went by. But could you just sort of help us understand this a bit, Ian, especially when we're moving into the uncharted waters and the kind of financial difficulties that we've got now, to suddenly start spending an additional £8,000 to £9,000 because something hasn't worked? We would have probably liked an explanation.
Okay, in terms of the reporting, as I understand it, there have been reports on shared service arrangements that have come to this council on a regular basis, and it's within those reports that the particular services of trading standards and environmental health would have been covered. In terms of trading standards, it's not so much a financial saving which is being gained there, it's that the two services within each council were at such a low level that actually to even provide a full trading standards service in each council was becoming extremely difficult. And certainly the total number of staff for those two services coming together is at round about the level which Scottish Government deems to be the lowest at which you can operate a reasonably full and competent trading standards service. There is, at national level, further activity through COSLA in relation to trading standards services in consultation, I understand, with Scottish Government, and so we'll need to see what the outcome of that is. But I think the direction of travel is very much towards what the two councils here have done. In terms of environmental health, similarly, the notion that there was going to be financial savings was not really being realised. And actually what the situation we got into was where most of the senior management in environmental health in East had left. And as part of the pilot arrangement, the senior staff here in Midlothian were also supervising what was happening in East Lothian, and that was actually putting quite a strain on the service here, and there seemed no genuine prospect that would be a joint service which would operate most effectively, certainly for Midlothian, let alone East, and that's why that again came to the pilot was concluded and not extended. In terms of the actual figures, maybe I haven't explained that, but if maybe Gary Fairley is able to touch on that.
When the 15-16 budget was set, there was provision for an income stream from East Lothian Council to reflect the shared service. And as a report in front of members today highlights, we've been reporting that we weren't going to receive that income stream through the four quarterly monitoring reports, so back to last September. arrangements have been made to regularise a position for 16-17 so that that income stream would not form part of the budget. Does not form part of the budget for this financial year.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. Page 144 on the homeless accommodation refers to Pentland and Midfield House coming on stream summer 2016. The delay caused a significant overspend of £323,000. I'm just wondering if we can get an update on where that's at.
Thanks, Provost. Certainly in terms of the remedial works for both of those properties is now taking place from this week. We anticipate that the Poulton Centre should come on stream by August and the Pentland House should be reused from September at the latest October.
Councillor Muirhead.
Yeah, Provost, can I refer you to page 149, the bottom of the page, the item on snow sports centre income. £137 to the good, and it's indicating that there's higher than expected income for that area. Do we, it's unfortunate Gary Sherritt's not here, he may have been able to answer this better than anybody else, but when we've got that kind of additional income unforeseen there, do we just absorb that into the general budget, or do we take steps to reflect the fact that the additional use will create additional maintenance requirements, you know, or do we just grab the whole bit of the additional money that's being generated there? Because I know that that's been an issue in some other areas over the piece where we've had, for example, up at Last Wage Centre, a lot better returns in terms of the cafe that's there, but then we've got complaints about the equipment not being maintained properly, you know, and some of that money really needs to be gone into there. So is there anybody that can answer that?
Yep, Provost, to come back and consider your head's question, we would always look to make sure that we realign the budget for such income sources in a way that is sustainable. So I think at quarter two, when we would be setting the budget for 16-17, for example, we were indicating an income of £90,000, but the budget was only increased. The income budget was only increased for 70, so that would give some headroom for the sort of issues the increased wear and tear that might arise from greater usage.
Okay, I'm happy to accept that report. We'll now take a 10-minute recess for a comfort break. Thank you.